Hey, Wish, let me start today's podcast by asking you a question about magazines. Do you read sports magazines? Yeah. Have you ever, I collect a lot of sports magazines. Do you read sports magazines? Have you read sports magazines? You're a big sports magazine kind of guy. Can't go past the newsstand without picking up a sports magazine.
Well, here's the thing. Okay, first off, there are certain magazines that have elements of sports in them, but may not necessarily be sports magazines. Let's say, for example, a magazine that celebrates the female form. Is that a sports magazine?
It's sport-ish. It's sporting. I don't know necessarily that it is sports.
Okay, fair enough. When I was a young lad, I used to get Sports Illustrated on the regular.
Yep.
I stopped getting it when it turned its pages over to golf. Because golf sold more advertising than other sports, I kind of fell off the Sports Illustrated thing. When I was a very young lad, I used to buy, I don't know if you remember this thing, it was a daily sports newspaper called The National.
Oh, God, that's legendary.
Yeah, I used to buy The National.
That's legendary. Oh, that was daily, too, wasn't it?
Daily sports newspaper, yep.
And great writing in that, yeah.
And of course, I read the great Sports Fan magazine out of Washington D.C. With whom I was employed for several years under the great James J. Patterson. So and also I used to get the Fourth Period magazine before they dismissed me from their back page without really any explanation.
They just give you the punt.
They stopped emailing me. I don't know what it is. Like, I don't know. Like,
guys.
It's just, it got weird. Like, I don't have any problem with Dave Pignota or anything like that. Like, we're all cool and stuff, but they just never kind of said, hey, keep writing stops. It's very strange. Why do you ask, Jeff Merrick?
Well, here's why I ask. My little nickel and dime background on magazine. I've been a subscriber to the Hockey News going back to, 1983. I think I've subscribed to the Hockey News, and I got stacks of them in the back office. When I was a kid, I used to collect Goal Mag. Remember Goal Magazine?
Oh, yeah.
I used to collect Goal Mag, Hockey Digest. Man, a pack of hockey. Every time
was Hockey Digest the same dimensions as Baseball Digest, the little diary kind of thing?
Yep. Yeah, okay. That's exact same. And I used to collect up that one. And the reason I bring this up is, you know, all these magazines all have a very strong look forward slant for obvious reasons. Here's what's happening right now. Let's document what's happening right now. And then let's look forward. Now, I was just moments before the podcast, I'm checking my Yahoo Mail in my Society for International Hockey Research group. And there's a thread about a new sports magazine. I'm going to find this here. There's a new sports history magazine coming out, which is completely dedicated to sports in the past. And the first issue comes out. It's called Sports History Magazine. The first issue comes out on July 1st, and in it is a story about the 1967 NHL expansion. The class of 67, hockey expands its reach. There's also stories about polo, pro football in Ohio, the history and demise of WAC football. What else is on this one? Some stuff about baseball board games of our youth. So essentially, if you're looking for new information on sports or new perspectives on sports going forward, this isn't the magazine for you, but it is a historical sports magazine.
Wow.
See, this perked up my ears. Like, this is something that I would love. And we have at the Society of International Hockey Research, you know, these quarterlies that come out, and they're all historical pieces. But never have I really seen dedicated to sports. And there might be one out there. Correct me if I'm wrong. But I've never seen one that's completely dedicated, issue in and issue out, to the history of sports. Do you think, Wish, because we've seen blogs like this, so why not magazines, that a magazine dedicated specifically to the history of hockey would do well? Is there a market for that? You go back and look at the formation of the WHA, the expansion of the NHL, the Rocket Richard era, the beginnings of the NHA as a transition to the NHL in 1917, and how they totally effed Eddie Livingston out of his league. Do you think there's a market for that kind of stuff?
Not at all. There's a market for people like you and your friends when you push away your 20-sided dice and push up your glasses onto your nose and then bury your faces in these magazines. But the reason I don't think that there's a market for it is frankly because of the medium. To me, what you're talking about is something that I would like to experience either – it's sort of caught between two worlds. I'd like to experience it either in a book, or I'd like to experience it – and here's where I'm going – in a podcast. Like, there are a lot of podcasts out there that have a historical bent that's like listening to the History Channel. And I think that a sports history podcast or a hockey history podcast for me would be more, be more palatable than a hockey history magazine. That's just me though.
Ooh, do I have time to do a sports history podcast in my schedule?
No, you kind of already do.
Well, I just do it on this podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, in 1987, here's what Ben Wilson did.
Do I have time to do a hockey? It's called Half the Show, I believe, is what the name of it
is. Yeah, maybe it is. Maybe
no, but it's a cool idea. It's a cool idea because you know what? The history of the things about the history of hockey that fascinate me are, one, the stories, and this is why I like doing the podcast with you, because you got so many of them. The stories that seem too outrageous to ever believe, the characters in the game, the fact that this used to be a sport populated by complete charlatans and sociopaths.
God, yes.
That's what I love. Also love, and you're also a student of this, the development of the game from a rules basis. You know, yeah. What happened to create certain rules? Well, even today, I mean, we obviously see, Rule 48 and things like that. There are catalysts for that. See the progression of rules in a game, be it rules on the ice, be it playoff format, be it divisional format, all that other stuff, the march through time and the development of all those things to bring us to the NHL that we have in 2013 to me is fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's always been curious. And I think that goes back to, you know, when I think I've mentioned on the podcast. When I was a kid, I used to go to the CNE at the Hockey Hall of Fame, and my parents would leave me there. Great parents. Love them. And they'd leave me there for the whole day. Mind you, I wanted to be there the whole day. I'd take my little notepad and I'd write down every little thing I could figure out about hockey. I mean, I was like 8 years old, 7 years old. Right? Uh-huh. Wandering around the Hockey Hall of Fame, writing
stuff. A man walked over and he said, "Hey, what's your name, little boy?"
My name's Jeffrey. Man.
"Well, my name's Gordy. Good to meet you." And he shook your hand with a massive meat hook. And that became a friendship that be forged over the generations. Gordy and Jeff, swapping stories.
Wow. Speaking of Gordy, we're going to talk about Dustin Brown's elbow in a couple of seconds here on Jason Pomeroy. The hearing, by the way, began an hour ago between Dustin Brown and Brendan Shanahan. More on that.
And also that ties into another theme in the opening, which is the progression of rules over time, because I think it's another facet of the Dustin Brown hit on Jason Pomeroy.
In what way?
Well, you want to talk about it now?
Why not? Sure.
Sure. Well, let's just jump into it.
I don't want to bore people.
Well, okay. But bottom line about your hockey history magazine, I think it's an interesting idea, but I would rather consume that information in another format. But that's just me. I think there's plenty of people out there that would love to sit poolside this summer while everyone else is reading Maxim and be reading Hockey History Magazine. And who's the centerfold?
I thought what everybody did was they took the CBA to the beach every year. Isn't that what everybody does? It's not just me. You put on some suntan lotion, you read to the CBA.
Who would be the centerfold? Who would be the centerfold in the first edition of Hockey History Magazine?
Gump Worsley. Oh, for sure. The Gumper.
Ooh.
rocking a crown and cola.
Oh,
poolside.
Gump looks so hot in the new Hockey History. Oh, man.
Look at all the Brill Cream in Gump's hair. Look at that Hawaiian shirt. He can barely do up all the buttons.
Leaked.
That's an athlete right there.
Leaked the Gump Worsley centerfold in the new Hockey History. I think it has to do with the progression of rules, sir, because frankly, for those who don't know the hit, Jason Pominville went to check Dustin Brown in the Wild versus Kings game on Tuesday night. And Brown was on the boards playing the puck. Pominville's coming in. Pominville kind of comes in a little crouched down. And there's contact between Brown's arm and Pominville's head. If you watch the replay, I think it's clear that Brown is laying a reverse check on Pominville and happens to kind of thrust his arm, thrust his elbow, thrust his shoulder, what have you, into Pominville's head, anticipating the hit. Now, you can call that bracing for the hit. It's not bracing for the hit. It's a reverse check. Now, the reason I think it ties into the theme of the progression of time and the changing of rules and all that stuff in the National Hockey League is – we're not having a conversation about this, I don't think, if it's not for the vigilant and let's be frank, legally necessary attention given by the National Hockey League to head injuries and to hits to the head and to Rule 48 yes. and to all this stuff.
Yes.
I don't think this gets the same attention it's getting now, a hearing late in the season, that kind of thing. If because you can argue that it wasn't an elbow. I don't know. You think it was. Mm. I'm not quite sure if it was. But I think that the reason why it's become an issue is because it was a hit to the head. Because otherwise, as you said, this is the Gordie Howe move.
Well, it's so interesting the way we revere Gordie Howe. Uh-oh, he's going to get you with the elbows. Ha, ha, ha. Oh, here comes elbows. Sharpen him up. Here comes number 9 on the winged wheel. Look out. Here comes Gordie. You better behave, son. He's going to get you with one of those elbows. Gordie wouldn't survive a season without a mittful of suspensions in today's National Hockey League. And I get the league evolves and hitting evolves. And the more that we learn about brain injuries and damage done to heads, you have to sort of adjust the rules accordingly based on the speed and the skill of the game and the appetite of fans to consume such hits. Where once upon a time, it was, wow, dude got his bell rung. Ha ha ha. Now it's, oh my God, I hope he's able to tie his shoes
yeah.
and able to play with his children and read them stories.
And it's you can literally make a list of guys that can't play. I mean, Scott Stevens is the prime example. Like Stevens was a ferocious hitter, but the way he hit wouldn't be allowed today. It just doesn't. And you know,
no,
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing for the game. He'd have to modulate. I don't buy the premise, by the way, that some people put out there that Stevens couldn't play in today's league. I think Stevens is a good enough player where he could totally play. But I agree that he would have to change the way he plays based on the rules that we have.
He wouldn't be able to make that lunging hit, that football player hit. He wasn't the first to do it. But he was the one that popularized it, and he was the one that hit that way with most consistency and with most danger. That way you bend the knees and you lunge like a linebacker into the player, which at that time was, oh, Eric, you got to keep yourself up. Slava, watch yourself there, buddy. Hey, Mr. Carolina Hurricane, you better keep your heads up. Scott Stevens is on the ice. Stevens could totally play in the game. He could totally play in the game now. He would alter the way he played. He would alter the way he hit. We focus a lot on the hitting of Scott Stevens and tend to forget there was a really great hockey player inside the guy that was, you know, a shark on the ice.
Yeah.
And really damaging guys. But going back to the Dustin Brown hit, I don't mind a bump back hit. I actually think that a bump back hit is necessary in the game, and I like the fact that bump back hits exist. You have the puck, someone's coming to hit you at that last moment, you bump back. Like, hey, I'm braced for the hit. If you're going to come and hit me, you better be prepared because I'm going to come and hit you. It's the epitome of two Rams going at each other, and I like that. I think that's a great moment within the game. The problem in this one was Jason Pominville is hunched down, and he's reaching, trying to get the puck, and Brown goes back to bump back on the hit, and the elbow gets extended and hits his head. If it's a shoulder hitting the head, I have no problem with it. Because you have to expect you're going to get hit by a shoulder. And if you're leaning down like that and someone hits you with a shoulder in your head, I'm sorry, but that's your fault. The only problem I had is the elbow extended into it. At that point, you're saying it's not a bump back hit, but it is a hit with a weapon, which is that elbow pad.
Yeah. And I respect the Kings fans that were arguing that, you know, Pominville initiated the hit. I respect the Kings fans. They're saying that he almost ran into his elbow because he was that low. But you could tell what Dustin Brown is doing
in this play.
Stuck
the elbow out.
Even whether it's not the elbow or not, he still stuck his arm out and made contact with the head. There's no disputing that. So that there's a hearing, that there's probably going to be a suspension, is completely understandable, I think, in this situation. It's a new league. It's a new league, and you can't do this anymore. And maybe it's not a good league, a better league because of it, or maybe it's just that we have to all grin and bear it because that's the way of the world. I mean, listen, the National Football League is getting sued out the ass.
God.
For not taking care of its players' health. So, because we are in this litigious society, you're going to know that the National Hockey League is going to keep enforcing these rules on headshots, and then eventually we're going to get around to the thing we don't want to talk about, which is how do you keep players safe with these rules and winkingly endorse fighting. It'll happen at some point.
Because that is two players agreeing to do something.
Mm-hmm.
There is still a clear distinction between that. That is two players agreeing to fight.
Until the first lawsuit from somebody who decides to Bertuzzi Crawford his old coach and say, well, he made me go out there and fight against my will because that was my role on this team. And if it wasn't for the NHL implicitly endorsing fighting, I wouldn't have to play that role. I guarantee you it'll happen at some point. There'll be some dude who's got CTE or some, you know, borderline going down the aneurysm road kind of thing who decides
he's
to take out his aggression on the league.
I know.
Yeah,
he's broke,
sure.
And he's got money, and he's got a crusading lawyer.
Exactly.
I just hope
he's got a crusading lawyer.
I hope it doesn't come to that.
Yeah, but It might.
I just hope that it doesn't.
Possibilities there.
Yeah, I hope there doesn't.
Bottom line, though, in that Kings Wild game is it's a great win for the Wild. Backstrom played really well. Gutsy performance, close game. 53 points, 2 up on Columbus, 3 up on Detroit. But I wanted to ask you this.
Okay.
The Los Angeles Kings play the Detroit Red Wings tonight. Okay?
Yeah.
Hence the necessity for a hearing. For the second time this season, the Minnesota Wild are going to see an opponent suspended at a time in which they don't want an opponent suspended. They want Corey Perry in the lineup for the Ducks after that Jason Zucker hit because it benefits them when the Ducks are playing their opponents. They want Dustin Brown in the lineup against Detroit because Detroit is 3 points in back of them with a game in hand. So my question to you on this podcast of grand ideas that we share in the public forum, should general managers of opposing teams have a chance to pick and choose where a suspended opponents play or don't play? Say
That's
like
a question.
Seven-game span for a two-game suspension, and the general manager of the aggrieved party can say, okay, I get 2 games out of these next 7. I choose you, and I choose you, and you won't have your captain for those 2 games.
So hang on a second. So for those 2 games, against whom?
Let's say that that Dustin Brown gets a 1-game suspension.
Okay. Should they be able to pick when that game is?
And the LA Kings have at Detroit and San Jose at home left. Okay. Now, the Wild are 4 points away from the Sharks. Ain't catching them. Unless there's some kind of crazy malarkey that goes on with San Jose in the last 2 games. But they're 3 up on Detroit, and Detroit has a game in hand. Now, in theory, Brown gets suspended for a game, serves it in his next game. Should Chuck Fletcher have a chance to say, well, there's 2 games left. Brown playing in this game is beneficial to us. We are the aggrieved party. I should have the right to say, I want him to play in the Detroit game and serve a suspension in the San Jose game.
But not the San Jose game. It's interesting. Or the other theory that's out there is, and I've heard this one a lot too, the general manager whose player just got tuned should be able to decide. Yeah, further to that point, the player who gets suspended should still be able to play games in the NHL, but just not against a team that he did the injustice. I.e., so for, let's say, 2 games or 4 games, whatever, Dustin Brown can't play against the Minnesota Wild.
So the suspension is served against, so you don't see that guy in the games that you play against that opponent.
Bingo. And they can't dress anyone in his place.
Well, that's the facet of the suspensions that I've always found really interesting is making it more of a roster
team
implication than anything else. Because then all of a sudden you put the onus on teams to better manage and police their players. And frankly, I think we've had some disagreement on this in the past. I don't think that teams and coaches and GMs and the power structure and management are held accountable enough for the actions of their players sometimes.
Part of it, and you're right. And specifically third and fourth line guys who are told to go out there and finish your check and be physical and separate the man from the puck and do all those things that first line players aren't expected to. And if the third line guy doesn't do it, he gets benched. The first line guy just, I don't know, nothing. Nothing happens. He takes his, you know, he gets his 25 shifts a game and everything's fine. What do you think about that idea?
It's an interesting idea.
You just can't play against the team you offended.
It's an interesting idea.
So Dustin Brown could play tonight against the Detroit Red Wings, but then the next time he's playing against the Minnesota Wild, and maybe that includes playoffs, dun, 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 Dustin Brown can't play.
Yeah. Well, I like the idea of putting more control in the, or making it more valuable to the aggrieved party than it currently is, because sometimes suspensions happen and it's like, it winds up hurting the team that lost their player. Like, you know, losing Dustin Brown in that game against the Wings hurts the Wild twice. They lose Pominville, and they lose one of the driving forces of the Kings' success in a critical game for the Wild's playoff chances. All right, Josh is cracking the whip. We have to start the show now, Eric, okay?
He is. I thought we already started the show. Oh, okay.
We have to start the show proper, shall we?
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
We're going to get corner offices out of this one for sure, Greg. Right away, your BS detector should go off. Why do I know this crap? What's wrong with me? Are you insane?
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
You and I are not quite that dissimilar.
La 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 la, hockey, hockey, hockey.
Seattle is playing excellent defense these days.
What does that even mean?
Debate hockey.
So much junior hockey knowledge in that big juicy brain.
Oh, yeah.
Pop culture.
See, I kind of look at our podcast here like Jazz Odyssey.
There's some bloggers that are great, that are entertaining, that are factual. It's fabulous.
Damn right, JD.
And more hockey.
Just what we need to shoot off the side of the barn. That's how I developed my wrist shot, shooting frozen cow patties in Lloydminster.
Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Merrick versus Wyshynski, huh?
Indeed, huh?
Hang on a second here. I'm typing a message to Josh.
Okay.
For Billy Jaffe's hotel room. That's the number to call him on, not the cell. Josh, you got that, bud? All right.
Spoiler warning, Billy Jaffe joining us today.
Yeah.
On the podcast. The long-awaited debut of Billy Jaffe. Billy Jaffe is one of our favorite people, but we've just never had him on for some reason.
I can't believe that. I remember talking to Billy a couple times. Last time was at trade deadline. He's like, when am I coming on your podcast? I'm like, I thought you have been on the podcast.
Yeah, we thought
he said,
too.
Nope, never been on. And then I worked with him on Monday night, always excellent. And he's like, when am I going to come on your podcast? Well, today is the day, yo.
Today is Billy Jaffe Day.
Jaffe back.
Yeah. It's like Jimmy Shaker Jaffe Day from Ransom.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just made a Jimmy Shaker Day reference. Also, going postal, if you have anything to ask us, please do so. PuckDaddyBlog@Yahoo.com, @Wyshynski, @JeffMerrick on the Twitter, #NBSW. This is, of course, the day in which we answer anything that you'd like to ask us, is the way it works.
Huh.
Also, after we talk to Billy, get a little postmortem, a little tribute to a division that crowned its last champion last night,
the
Southeast. The South
Caps
least division.
Is winning the here's the question you ask today, folks. Is winning the Southeast division much like bragging about being the toughest clown in the circus?
You're unrelenting. By the way, good on the Caps last night for closing it out, winning the division. Good on the Winnipeg Jets for bringing it second half of back-to-back games, giving up a fluky, weird goal off the hop, losing Wellwood, losing Bogosian, Enstrom out, Jokinen out.
Yeah.
They played a really – that's a game that if you're a Jets fan, yeah, you could be super pissed that they lost and their season's pretty much done, but you didn't go out like a punk. You did not go out like a punk last night. All right, joining us now on the line – boy, this man is a jack of all trades. This man has more jobs than a Jamaican cab driver. This man works for the NHL Network, Rogers Sportsnet, MSG Networks, and Nesson. He is Billy Jaffe, and he joins us here on Merrick vs. Wyshynski. Hello, Billy. Welcome finally to the podcast.
Finally.
First of all, I thought it was appropriate that you were using the term punk and then introducing me. And yes, it is a it's bucket list time. Really, scratch one off.
Oh, yeah.
I think it took 2 years, finally. Or I don't know how long is how long you guys been doing this?
Like, we've been doing about a year and a half because of the lockout. No, that's not true. We actually did a show during the lockout.
Like dog years. In hockey terms, that's like, you know, to 7 years. So it's really almost, you guys have been doing this like 10 years, basically.
Oh, yeah.
And you haven't had me on. So that's okay. I'm excited. I'm telling you, it is a gorgeous day here in Boston. The sun came out about noon and, have an opportunity to have a day off, which is a rarity for me and my schedule. And I said, there's one thing I want to do, and it's come back, and it's talk to you two guys and talk hockey. And then actually, this is perfect because this is going to be my hockey talk for the day. And then I am actually going to take in a Red Sox game, which I haven't done in a few years, have a few beverages, hang out with the family, and actually enjoy the night. It's a rare day off and a rare having family with me on the road, too. So, and now to talk to you guys, even more of a perfect day.
Well, we will make this as painless as possible, Mr. Jaffe. And yes, you finally had the podcast magic wand waved over your head. You've worked for NHL franchises. You've worked with every broadcaster in the industry, and now you're on a podcast. Congratulations, Neil Armstrong. You've put the flag in the moon.
I'm Michelle Petit of broadcasters. Yes, great. Awesome.
All right. All right, Mike Small. Here we go then. We were just talking about the Washington Capitals claiming the Southeast Division yesterday in a game that, you know, pretty much from the hop felt like a playoff game. Did you get a chance to watch the Jets and the Caps last night? And if you didn't, just your general thoughts on the comeback kids that this year have been the Caps.
I didn't get to watch it, Jeff, because I was doing the Bruins debacle in Philadelphia. If you're a Philly fan,
right,
you loved it. If you're the Bruins fan, you can't stand it. But I was watching it online. You know what I mean? I had it up on the screen, and then I'm watching the scores and everything. And I talked to a few people that did see it, and they echoed what you say: playoff intensity, attitude, and it should, because it was such a big game for both franchises. Listen, my feeling on the Washington Capitals in this, and I picked them to win the division to start the year, and I got scoffed at by a lot of people. It's going to be Carolina, and then I also said, well, listen, I don't think the Caps are awesome, but I think they're going to win that division because I don't think the division is great. And I stuck with it all year long, and I feel good about that because I still believe in Alexander Ovechkin. I know he got raked over, and I gave it to him this year too at times, but I still believe in him, and I still believe in some of the players they have there. I've liked Holtby since he's been a rookie. I don't think he's the next George Vezina, but I think he's a heck of a goaltender. I like his attitude. It's hard not to appreciate what Adam Oates and his staff have done there. And it's hard the restaurant business is an immediate gratification business, right? Every night you leave after a bad meal, you don't want to come back usually to that place. Hockey's not that much different, or sports isn't that much different. You have a bad night, at least you have a chance to get back at it. They had a bunch of bad nights. You know, a lot of people wrote them off, and they stuck with it in a very short, condensed season. And I'm very impressed with what they've done. They are playing a different style, Jeff. They are making plays differently. It is not all about Ovechkin. I'm completely impressed with how Mike Green has come back. See, I wasn't as big a believer in him, guys, as I was in Ovechkin.
Yeah.
I was concerned about him, and I think he's come back in a real nice way.
Well, that's kind of the hidden success for this team is, you know, Ovechkin's got all of the attention for obvious reasons. I mean, the goal scoring rip that he's on right now is probably one of historic proportions. But the way that Green has played, and more importantly than anything else, stayed healthy, and the way that Nick Backstrom has played after what I thought was an even worse start to the season than Ovechkin had, I think is part and parcel to why this team has come back and won the division.
Wish, absolutely, but. Absolutely. And Ovechkin does not get to this point if it wasn't for the play of Nick Backstrom, you know, Nicholas Backstrom. He doesn't. He just doesn't. You know, you connect with him, you reconnect with him on a line. That had to feel good. And I'll say this too, and I am not as, you know, I like Mike Ribeiro in the sense he does a lot of neat, nifty things on the ice. I always say, do you win with a guy like Mike Ribeiro? And to his credit, besides being a point of game player, he has allowed the Capitals, after that really rough start, because he was probably their best forward for a while,
yeah,
right? He was
yeah,
most consistent along with Brouwer. Yeah. Ribeiro allowed for Adam Oates and his staff to float, just barely keep the, you know, above water, just float above water, to stay in it just enough, even though there was a lot of tough days there in the capital city of the U.S. He stuck with it, and Ribeiro was good enough. So I give big marks to Mike Ribeiro. Again, not always the type of guy I think you really win with, but huge props for him being good enough and staying good all year. And absolutely, Backstrom, I think something was wrong with him. And look, I'm not around that team, but he sure didn't play like he was completely healthy to me for a while. And, you know, there's a lot of residual things that he's had to deal with, and I wonder if that was bothering him to start the year. But, boy, has he been good. I just like the way, getting back to Green, though, I love the way he skates. I like the way how he is back to kind of floating on the ice and making breakouts look easy. To me, that is the biggest thing I see with him.
And is the unsung guy on that team Troy Brouwer? I think he's got 19 on the season now, and nobody talks about him.
Yeah, you're right. But that's his role, meaning be that unsung guy. He is that guy. He was that guy with the Blackhawks. He's this guy with the Caps, and he's happy with that role. That's why you hear nothing really about him. But yes, we can give him some props. 19 goals, seven of them are on the power play, if I remember correctly. So he has helped out this team an awful lot. He's got the second most power play goals next to Alexander Ovechkin. So he's helped this team out an awful lot there too. I think that he has earned his keep, so to speak, this year. And I don't think there's ever an issue about him, right? How he plays, in the sense of he's always going to put it out in the line. It isn't always the most, the sexiest game, but you need guys like him to come through for your team, no question.
Billy Jaffe, have you been able to wrap your brain around the idea that the New York Islanders are a playoff team again?
No, but yes. No, but yes, because watching them for a while this year, I saw a team that was soft defensively. They were exposed defensively as a team. I'm not just talking the D crew, even though I thought the D crew kind of had some issues there. And I saw a team that relied so heavily on one of the great, great players in the game in John Tavares up front, and didn't get other production from other players. I thought, okay, they're not the worst team in the league by any stretch. I didn't think they were going to be the worst team, but I didn't think they would be the playoffs. I had them in the 9, 10, 11 spot this year. And again, after that, for a while, I'm like, oh, well, okay, I was kind of right. For the fans, first of all, couldn't be more thrilled for the fans of the Islanders, the ones that are remaining, the ones that are jumping back on the bandwagon. I'll even be happy for them. I am thrilled for them right now because they have suffered through some miserable years there. Uncertainty, lack of production, an awful arena. Seriously, all that, you throw it all into one, it makes for tough times. But for the players, not just the ones that have been there for a long time, but for the players that are there now that have worked within the system, for Jack Capuano, who tweaked some things, for the players that have really come together the second half of the year, that's the part of me that can wrap it around, because I say young, but not, you know, they're young veteran players, very physically different than what they were a few years ago. Josh Bailey is a man now. Kyle Laposo is playing the way that Kyle Laposo should have, or where they were hoping to, that he would play a few years ago. He's there. Franz Nielsen, whew, come through great. You already have Tavares and Molson. They're getting some really good production. And then lastly, I'm impressed by their defensive play now. They really swarm the puck well. They have much better spacing. They have much better support. One thing that they need to do, and we talked about this on one of my shows this past weekend on MSG Network, one thing they need to do is play away from the puck a little bit better, but they're continuing to learn that. So I give the players huge props, and again, for the fans, couldn't be more happy for the fans. It's awesome stuff for them.
All right, Billy, to the Boston Bruins. And, boy, did Claude Julien have cantaloupes on the weekend, scratching Milan Lucic. Your thoughts on the Bees, namely, Billy, what's wrong with the Bees?
Well, Claude Julien, or let's say Claude out of it for a second. Any coach, you guys know this, you're involved in the game. What hammers do they hold? They only hold a
ice
few
time.
Hammers nowadays.
Ice,
they
ice
hold
time.
Ice time,
ice
right?
Time.
That,
yeah.
That,
yeah.
The ice time. And both in a game and out of a game. That's it. Meaning,
yep.
And that's about it. So Claude Julien had to use the hammer on him. And quite honestly, Claude Julien, for a long time, guys, didn't have the other pieces to put out there, the other players to put out there, to allow him to have a hammer. His hammer was kept in the toolbox, so to speak, kind of like how mine is at home. I let my wife handle all the repairs, otherwise they would never get done or be correct. But Claude Julien needed to do that, and it's helped make Milan Lucic a little more accountable. It's helped him make a little more he knew he wasn't playing well for a while, and you know, it's still never a fun thing when you get scratched. The Boston Bruins right now, this is my take on them. They don't scare anybody right now. They're not playing Boston Bruin hockey. And even when they try and do some different things, they're not being as responsible with the puck. And you put all those together and you get this kind of discombobulated team. And, you know, last night, a really good example. And by the way, and I know this sounds like an excuse, but I've seen it. I've felt it. This team is tired right now, like a lot of other teams. We're seeing some other teams that are pretty tired. But I think you throw on the fact of what happened last Monday with the marathon, with the manhunt, with the cancellation of games. It wasn't like cancellation of games where they knew in advance. It was they all came to the rink, and they all said, what's going on? And they all found out, and they all said, get home, get to your families, stay safe, listen to the police. This was not a typical cancellation game scenario, if there is such a thing. I think it's played an emotional toll on them, and I think, you know, look, they go everywhere. People have beautiful, memorable or memorials or national anthems, and I think it's gorgeous, and I think it's wonderful, and I think it's appropriate, but I do think it's been a tiring situation for this team. With all that said, as I get back to the actual question, they're just not playing the kind of hockey that scares people right now, and with the puck, without the puck, they're not managing it well. They turned it over how many times last night? Middle of the ice, sloppy, not getting it off the boards and in. When the Bruins don't get on their forecheck, whether it's Lucic, Sagan, Thornton, Paille, any of them, they're not as feared, and they're not doing it. They're not scaring the bejesus out of anybody right now, and they need to get that back. A lot of people have said to me, Bruins fans in particular, well, the LA Kings got into the playoffs in the AC last year, and the Bruins are better than that than they were, and they got in. I said, but got to remember something. The LA Kings were good from the moment or a week or two after Sutter was hired, which was give or take halfway through the season. It was actually a little before that. It was November. But they went on a great second half run. They were primed coming into the playoffs. The Bruins are not primed right now coming into the playoffs.
This is indeed true. Last one for me, sir, if you had to handicap the Hart Trophy race, because I've got my guy. Who's your guy in the Hart Trophy race?
Seriously, this is a tough one to answer right now. Tell me who your guy is. I mean, I already have my guy, too, but tell me who your guy is.
My guy comes with one condition, which is that we talked about on the show many times. It is part of my religious Professional Hockey Writers Association voting dogma that the team has to be a playoff team in order for the player to be MVP. If the Columbus Blue Jackets make it, Bobrovsky is the MVP and the Vezina winner, hands down, no questions asked. If he doesn't make it, I think I'm leaning Ovechkin.
The only thing I would disagree about that statement is that I think Bobrovsky actually has a better chance, at least in my book, of winning the Hart than he does the Vezina. As good as he's been for the Vezina, you cannot avoid, in this humble person's opinion, Antti Niemi and the numbers, the sheer numbers and the volume, and the fact that his team couldn't even average a half a goal a game for a while. And you know what I mean? And they were, they started out great, they went awful, they went in the crapper, they come out of it again, they go back in, and they weren't losing 7-1, they were losing by, you know, a goal. And Niemi, and the fact that he's played in all but four games this year, and he's in the top of the categories ever, that's just my take. Now back to your real question though, I would think Bobrovsky will get nominated for it. I know Crosby obviously will, and my heartstrings actually go towards Crosby because I think he's been so interesting, yet he hasn't played a lot. But his numbers are still scary. That's how good he is. I'm going to say it's either Crosby or Jonathan Toews, though, when it's all said and done. Toews, even though he's down, he's 8-10 points behind Crosby right now and everything. And Ovechkin's been phenomenal, too. Phenomenal. I think a lot of people, I think Jonathan Toews might be the best player. Even though he's on this great team, he does everything well for that team. He might be the most valuable player, at least to me, he might be the most valuable in the league. It's a hard one to handicap right now, though. I will say that. All right. It is very hard.
And then, Billy, for my last question, finish this sentence. My favorite thing about the NHL this year has been blank. Or maybe my most surprising thing in the NHL this year has been blank.
Okay, I'll do it real quick. My favorite thing about the NHL this year has been me getting back to platinum status with all the hotels and airlines I travel on, because for a while I didn't have it. Actually, that's my most favorite thing and my worst, most thing I despise the most, because I'm gone too much. But that's a whole other podcast for another time and another day. My most surprising thing this year has been the amount of teams that were out of it last year, I guess, that are in it this year. But as I contradict myself here, remember now, we're only halfway through what would be a regular season, so I would think some of these teams would maybe fall off. But since we're not, and since they started late, I'm seeing some teams like Toronto, like the aforementioned Islanders, like Anaheim, in the playoff race, having a great run, and making it interesting. And the league, quite honestly, has gotten just about everything they could ask for in this truncated season. You know what I mean? They've gotten these great runs that are coming down to it. And the other thing is obviously the Columbus Blue Jackets. Let's not keep them out of it. I thought, you asked me if I was surprised about the Islanders, if I could wrap my big head around it. No, I really couldn't, but yes, I kind of can. I cannot wrap my head around the Blue Jackets making the playoffs, but they might, but I can't do that. Good for them, Billy, if they do. Great story, too.
I completely agree. Billy Jaffe, pleasure to finally have you on the podcast. I imagine, sir, we'll call on your services again at some point.
My cell phone rings in America and in Canada at any time, especially when I see one of you two calling.
You must have a magic cell phone then. That's a very impressive. All right, Billy, thank you so much for joining us.
Can't be good. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Follow him on Twitter, at B Jaffe, J-A-F-F-E, the man who will one day take your job as well, because as Greg points out, MSG Network, NESN, Sportsnet up here, NHL Network. Folks, Billy Jaffe is coming for your job next.
That coffee that was made for you this morning, that was Billy Jaffe.
Billy Jaffe made that.
The person who sweeps up to your office after
you
leave.
Drive-through. Yep,
that's Billy Jaffe.
The guy that that picked up your dry cleaning, that's Billy Jaffe. The guy that put a broom in his ass and swept up on the way out, that was Billy Jaffe.
Hello, wait a second. That was Billy Jaffe? I didn't recognize his ass. Oh, you see.
Yeah, well, you can recognize him for the maid outfit.
All right, sir, I'm going to give you some names here. Ready?
Names?
Okay. The 2006-2007 Atlanta Thrashers. The 2011-2012 Florida Panthers. From 2002 to 2004, it was the Tampa Bay Lightning. The Carolina Hurricanes have done it no less than three times. The Washington Capitals have done it no less than seven times. They are, sir, your Southeast
champions.
Division champions, going all the way back to 98-99. Last night, the Capitals become the final team to capture the flag, of the Southeast Division. As I said in the post I wrote last night about the Caps in the Southeast, the punchline to what many consider to be the longest running joke in the National Hockey League.
Yeah. Are you sad to see it go, Greg Wyshynski?
No.
Are you sad to see it go bye-bye?
I'm not.
No.
I am not at all. I you know why? Because for a number of reasons. First of all, because there was a point in history, maybe before the lockout, the 05 lockout, or maybe just after it, in which this division was the preeminent punching bag for anybody who wanted to shit on a non-traditional market. Like, there was more talk about the contraction of these franchises than there was ever about what they were doing on the ice. And I always hated that. The division never came together. There was no personality. Florida would come to Washington on a Tuesday night. Nobody would care. The Capitals and Hurricanes never really developed the rivalry they should have. Did it with the Lightning. The Lightning in Florida don't even have the rivalry they should have. I hate this division. I'm not sad at all to see it go.
Yeah, nor am I. Although, you know who I feel really sorry for now that it is gone?
Who?
Is Florida and Tampa, because they get effed in all of this. They get totally screwed. They get totally screwed out of all.
I've come around on that a little bit. I mean, you have to, from a travel standpoint, they're screwed. From a competitive standpoint, everybody who's not in the Southeast is screwed now because there's no more cupcakes. They have to play real teams now.
Mm-hmm.
But from a money standpoint, from a financial standpoint, there will be a windfall from all of the Northeast teams coming and playing in Florida every year. We know this.
What? Really?
You don't think so?
How's this? What kind of windfall? How?
Oh, easy. The snowbirds that travel to Florida, the expats that live in Florida, all of these people will come out and see their teams when they come to town. Boston, Buffalo.
That was the thought originally when they went there. You know what the thought was? The thought was there's a lot of retired Canadians in Florida, therefore they're going to go to hockey games. And you know what they soon realized? The reason that they're not in Canada anymore is those people don't like hockey. That's why they went to Florida. Those are the Canadians that don't like hockey. We're going to Florida. The weather's nice, and we're going to put up with hockey.
That's the generalization. Those teams always draw when they go to Florida.
Yeah, they do. They do draw them out better than other. But you know, didn't you look at the realignment as saying all they had to do was separate Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, but they didn't want to piss off Ed Snyder and Mario Lemieux. Instead, they'll just get under the skin of Florida and Tampa because they're not as powerful or as important in the NHL as Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. NHL didn't have the stomach to do it.
Yeah.
They put Pittsburgh and Philadelphia on a higher pedestal than Tampa and Florida. And the way you can prove it is in divisional realignment. There's your proof. because they had a chance. They separated Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, but they couldn't bring themselves to do it.
There it is. Before we get to it, that's a very good point. Before we get to a Wednesday favorite, I understand you'd like to make mention of the personnel management of the Calgary Flames towards the end
of
the season.
Did you see that lineup yesterday? Did you see who was scratched yesterday? Like, they scratched like half of their team in a game against the Nashville Predators. Now, I'm not going to say this is like Eddie Johnson in 1984 tanking the remainder of the season to secure the first overall pick, Mario Lemieux. New Jersey selects Kirk Muller from the OHL. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. But if I'm Nashville, are you not furious that essentially the Calgary Flames went to bat yesterday with, you know, a good chunk of the Abbotsford Heat, where the Nashville Predators went in there with the Nashville Predators, who are not a playoff team, not a great team by any stretch this year, but at least they iced their NHL team. They didn't treat last night's game as a mini training camp, or could you make the argument as a way to perhaps ensure a loss, to perhaps ensure that you get a better shot at a higher draft pick come lottery time? If I'm Nashville, I'm kind of livid about this one.
A little bit, right?
More than
but
a little
no,
bit.
But there's no way to police it, though. That's the thing.
In preseason, you have to ice 10 quote-unquote regulars who have played a minimum amount of games in the NHL. Could you not do something in the National Hockey League whereby, you know, towards the end of the season, we've seen this before, and it's just so endlessly frustrating that teams just want to treat it as call-up camp. Let's have a training camp now. Although, mind you, we won't amend the ticket prices, even though we're giving you an American Hockey League product, we're still charging you NHL rates. Couldn't you come up with some way, some formula that a player has to have been on 20 games, has to have played 20 games for that team that season, and you have to have X amount of those guys in the lineup? So you can still have a couple of guys up from your minor league team to have a look, you know, see how he mixes in with the guys, but still, you're icing your best possible product at that time because people are still being asked to pay lots of money for these hockey tickets. Do you agree with that, or do you say, you know what, they should be able to ice, because right now there's no rule, you can ice whomever you want, right? They could have iced the Abbotsford Heat, the entire team, they could have if they wanted to, but don't you think that for the credibility of the game and the credibility, you know, of asking fans to pay a lot of money to watch NHL hockey, that there needs to be something to ensure that what we saw yesterday with the Calgary Flames doesn't happen again. It just kind of sat. It just didn't sit well with me. I know it was a nothing game in some respects, but it was a something game when it, as it relates to the draft lottery.
But it's just again, in theory, yes, that would be wonderful. But I just when teams get to the end of the season, they've been eliminated from the playoffs. All this stuff happens, and it becomes a situation of, well, we want to give XYZ a taste of the NHL before you know, so they can understand what it's like. I mean, there's no way you're going to be able to police it. Is my issue with it?
No. So, how about my solution? You have to play X amount of games. There has to be a minimum amount of players who have played a minimum amount of games in your lineup.
You know what they're going to end up doing?
Is eliminated.
Then, they're going to end up playing the injury thing. Well, this guy's day to day, so we need to call up this guy. That's what it'll be. That's the workaround.
This guy's exhausted.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. Maybe I'm just yelling at clouds. I just think it stinks. I just felt bad. I just felt bad for like people involved in that game last night. It just didn't sit well with me.
This is from Derek. I don't think so about Nashville. This is, I guess he thought I was saying that. This is to you. Did you look at their lineup too? Daniel Bang. I'm sorry, Bong. Bartley, Bong. Henderson, Watson.
Yeah. Austin Watson, by the way, got his first NHL goal last night. Congratulations,
Stephen
Austin
V. King.
Watson.
Stephen V. King writes in, NBA fines Spurs $250K for not dressing stars earlier this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's a bit more obvious in the NBA. 12-man roster versus you know, rolling lines.
Less of a team sport than the NHL.
Damn right.
Damn right. So why do we give out individual awards then?
All right, everybody. It's time for a Wednesday favorite. Do you want to do a mailbag segment every week?
It's time to look deep into the souls of Jeff Merrick and Greg Wyshynski. Whoa, not that deep.
We are nutting up for each other here.
Now's your chance to ask Merrick and Wyshynski anything, and we mean anything.
You got your thinking, Took?
Vegan cooking tips. Favorite Doctor Who characters. What's the best bar in Stouffville? Is there a bar in Stouffville? The meaning of life. Wait, let's not get carried away with that.
We answer your mail.
PuckDaddyBlog@Yahoo.com. On Twitter at Jeff Merrick and at Wyszynski. We're going postal on Merrick versus Wyszynski.
We begin this episode of Going Postal with a question for Jeff Merrick.
Oh.
Yeah. I like when they tailor them for this. Oh, okay. Tailor for you.
Thanks, man.
Where was this question? Now I'm missing it.
Flaccid or erect? Oh, sorry, never mind.
This is more of a theory, ready? This is Pumpernickel from theroyalhalf.com. I've tried tweeting Merrick this theory in the past, but clearly he has far too many Twitter groupies to wade through all of his mentions. Anyway, I believe that Cobb, as in describing zero or nothing when mentioning the score of a game, is because legendary Detroit Tiger Ty Cobb never wore a number.
I saw that, by the way. I did see that tweet. Sorry not to get back to you on that one. Could be, I guess. I don't know. Another theory that someone tweeted me is it's from Corn on the Cob. Something about kernels and nothing. When it's all done, you just have the cob left. Mm. I don't know. I have no idea where it comes from. I don't even... Here's how dumb it is. I don't even know how it's spelt. I don't even know how it's spelt, Wish. Is it one B or two B's?
If it's two B's, then that would make sense, right?
Totally. But I don't know. I've just always said it. Two Cob. What's the score? Ah, three Cob.
Another question for Merrick from Stafford Heppenstall. What does Merrick hate more, veal or Dustin Brown?
Veal. Trust me, veal. I don't hate Dustin Brown. There's elements of his game I don't like. That's all.
Thomas Plant writes in, why in the last few days of the regular season with exciting playoff races in both conferences did you waste the entire show yesterday with journalistic navel-gazing about two stories 99% of hockey fans don't give a shit about?
I would
argue that it's probably 40% of hockey fans don't give a shit about it. Talking about the Duncan Keith and the Don Brennan Matt Cook thing.
I don't know. Maybe this is just selfish navel gazing on our part, but I kind of, and I don't know if you're the same way about this. I kind of just want to talk about things that interest me because I find that it's, to me, that's what kind of keeps the inspiration for this podcast going for me. We could do, you know, outline playoff races like the NHL Network does every night, or like I do on Hockey Central. Would that be as interesting as having a different take on something? Like, can't you get playoff race talk on traditional sports radio? Traditional hockey talk radio? Well, that kind of everywhere? I thought the Brennan thing was interesting.
It's the same argument I get on the blog, which is that, we put up our Ninja Turtles thing yesterday and today, and I get people in the comments being like, how could you possibly put this up during the heat of a playoff race? It's one post out of eight that we'll do today, okay? The rest of them are about the playoff race or about the, you know, related to the current goings-on in the National Hockey League. So the idea that we can't spend some time on stuff that isn't,
well, if the Dallas Stars get an overtime loss, that means that their tragic number will be down to...
Who gives a shit? We'll cover that, but we'll cover everything else, too. It's a big podcast.
Yeah, although
I depressed you with that going postal, didn't I?
No, not at all.
I didn't mean
not
to.
At all. Because listen, I try to consider what people find interesting. And like I was saying yesterday, if you could bring something new to the program every day, then I think we've done our job. Something you didn't know before. Do we talk enough about the playoff races?
Yeah, I think we probably did, right?
I don't know. That dude thinks we did.
Maybe we should
just make this a two-hour podcast and call it a day.
Jay Kesner writes in, hey, guys, this isn't personal to either of you, but I just have to know. When people start flailing their gloves and sticks on the ice for a fight or something, how in the hell do they know where the gloves belong and which sticks belong where? If there are, like, two fights in a scrum, there's all this gear laying on the ice. Seems it would take a while to get it all where it belongs.
Everyone's got their name on their stick.
Everybody's got their names on their stuff.
Or the numbers.
Yep.
Yeah. Although Crosby had 27 on his gloves for the first couple of years of his career in honor of Daryl Sittler, but he's got the 87 on now. But yeah, I've got the numbers on that. Yep. Yep.
I did
there you go.
That.
That's something maybe some people didn't know. There you go. Flavor Puck. But yeah, everyone's got their name on their stick.
You are so bitter right now. I'm so sorry that I read that one.
Well, I'm not
you're
bitter.
Like,
I'm
you like disillusioned. You like disillusioned.
Nah.
Now.
It's just an overcast day and it's rainy and I didn't get a chance to work out today, so I get a little cranky when I don't get a chance.
I said overcast days never turn me on.
Turn me on. But
Mike Barber writes in, ESPN has a couple of 30 for 30s on hockey in development right now. E from Entourage is directing one on John Spano. The guy who did the Jimmy V 30 for 30 announced he's doing one for the 1980 Soviet losing team. What do you guys think the next hockey 30 for 30 should be on? I have a specific answer for this because it allows me to name drop the fact that I have a relationship with the great Bill Simmons of ESPN that Jeff Merrick does not have. Bill Simmons wanted to do this in the first year of 30 for 30, but either couldn't pull it together or they decided to do the Gretzky thing instead, which, you know, makes sense when you hear what it is. But Simmons wanted to do a 30 for 30 chronicling the history of the neutral zone trap. And I think that'd be fascinating to see.
Well, you know where you have to start.
Montreal.
No,
where?
Sir. Maple Leafs in the 1920s under Hap Day.
Oh, for
Hap Day, 20s and 30s. That's where it began.
Oh, okay. I was upset for a second because I thought I might have gotten something in error, but then I realized that I just don't have the grand scope of history that Benjamin Button over here has.
I'm just saying. This is where I can provide value for Bill Simmons. You tell Bill to call me on his little project, and I can help him out.
Bill,
right?
Here,
I can help the dude.
Here's a new magazine that came out about sports history you might be interested in. Look, Gump Worsley is the
centerfold.
What
like
about you?
Is there a staple in his belly button?
Is there a 30 for 30 you'd like to see? Is there a hockey documentary that's not been done yet that you'd like to see?
Yes. And you can't do it until the court thing happens, but more Bertuzzi.
Oh, yeah, right?
More Bertuzzi, man. That's still a big one. And that thing ain't going away. That's still a huge one. Players that... I mean, it's kind of a Debbie Downer topic, but, you know, players that had a hard time adjusting to stepping away from the spotlight. You know, guys that just, Terry Sawchuk is a great touchstone for, you know, guys that, you know, ended their lives and their careers, you know, either drinking or doing drugs and just, you know, killing themselves doing it.
I got halfway through the 30 for 30 on the athletes that spent all their money. Andre Rison and guys like that. That was a really good one. That was very, very entertaining. This is from Chad G. Pennington. What is the best old and recent Tom Cruise movie? My vote for his most recent films goes to Collateral.
Now, what did you say yesterday that got me on the Tom Cruise thing? I liked Magnolia. I love that movie.
Oh, right.
I love Magnolia. I really dug it.
All right.
Loved it.
Listen.
Loved Magnolia, and I love Tom Cruise in it. But my favorite Tom Cruise role has to be, is it Ron Kovac in Born on the 4th of July? But then, I haven't seen as many movies as you have. I haven't seen the wide... I know about Hap Day, coaching the Maple Leafs in the 30s. You know about every Tom Cruise movie. There's our point of distinction.
He's made some good flicks, man. I'd say old school Cruise, there is still no beating Top Gun. I would say middle Cruise, sort of 1990s Cruise. The first Mission Impossible I find to be extraordinarily rewatchable with the scene with him coming down the ceiling to steal the thing and the whole bit.
That's
like
good.
That's good. And I'm not a huge Jerry Maguire fan, to be honest with you. I found it to be a pretty good flick, but as Cameron Crowe movies go, it's not my favorite. New school Cruise. Due respect to Collateral because he was outstanding in it and it's a very great movie. And due respect to Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, which I really liked outside of the ending, my favorite Cruise new school movie is War of the Worlds. But War of the Worlds was fan-friggin-tastic on almost everything.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Never saw it. Again,
it's
put it
it's
on
great.
My list.
It's Spielberg doing a 9/11 allegory, right? So, I mean, it's really, really, really well made. So, there's that.
I like to see a 30 for 30 on Hap Day in the neutral zone trap.
Leahy chimes in, good for 30 for 30 that needs to happen, the Allen Eagleson story.
Yes. That would be a good one. Or the Ted Lindsay story, the original rise of the Players Association. What happened to Ted Lindsay because of it? Namely, punted off to Chicago, where at that point hockey players went to die. That's a great one. That's a good one. The Eagleson story would be top drawer. Or, here's one. The real story of the 04-05 lockout in the Players Association. Where'd the rift happen? Who turned on who knifed who, and whatever happened to Bob Goodnow? That's the one.
I was just emailing somebody. I was just typing out a tweet to somebody. Finally, mm-hmm. Andrew Capitulo.
Capitulo?
Sure. All right. Will the space-time continuum experience a rift if all four Stahl brothers play in the same game tomorrow?
Someone's going all Kurt Vonnegut on us here all of a sudden with the time space continuum.
Because Jordan, Eric, Jared,
yep.
Right?
Jared called up. Yep, from Charlotte.
And then there's Mark. Yeah. So it'd be kind of trippy.
Showbiz move. I love showbiz moves though in hockey. I don't think there are enough of them.
How many more Stahl brothers are there?
Is there
a Zeppo?
There's four of them.
There's just four?
No, Harpo. No. No. Although, man, wouldn't you be tempted if you're Henry Stahl just to, like, you know, go from junior hockey town to junior hockey town and say, "All right, ladies, who wants to send one to the show?" Right. I make hockey players. I make NHL hockey players. Oh, I'm Henry Stahl.
There it is. All right, everybody. That's the show for today. Hopefully all of the topics that we've chosen were palatable to you and relevant to you. I know we talked to Billy Jaffe for a while about the season, not about journalism.
Oh, don't get all.
You got all. I didn't get all. Got all.
I was thinking all. That's all I was. I was like, let me think about that. What should we have done the last couple of podcasts? Should we have done that, or should we have done something else? Should we have just focused on the races? Should we have just been those sports talk radio guys? Oh my God, what's happening in CBJ? Will they run out of road? They only have two games remaining tonight. A big one against Big D. Oh, sorry, that's Thursday. Don't forget the Red Wings. They still control their fate. They run the table. They run right into the Chicago Blackhawks in the first round.
Detroit versus LA tonight. LA obviously going to be without Dustin Brown. I think we could all agree on that. San Jose at Phoenix. Phoenix is a tragic number is at 1. Dallas's tragic number is at 1.
Oh, they blew it last night.
Oh, they really did. It was just a painful thing.
Although Logan Couture, what was more impressive to you last night? Logan Couture goal or that shot block with like 6 seconds remaining?
Probably the shot block because the goal was a product of a terrible turnover by Dallas.
Yeah. Yeah. That shot block was fantastic. I'm telling you, if that guy played in the Eastern Conference, because we all know there's an Eastern Conference bias in the NHL amongst the media, if Logan Couture played in the Eastern Conference, how huge would that dude be?
Yeah, true. All right, everybody, that's the show for today. I will be doing the next two shows, Merrick, from lovely NYC.
New York City. Oh, good for you.
Yeah.
I will be doing
back
them
to the
from
the Yahoo offices up there.
Oh, the headquarters. I'll be doing them from my office right here in Stouffville.
Oh, over in Stouffville.
Looking out over the rain.
Oh. All right. Thanks, everybody. We will talk to you tomorrow. Bye. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.